Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. This is a critical time for many bills at the State House, including a plan that's designed to control education spending as a way to help reduce the burden on local property taxpayers. The proposal includes a flexible cap of between 1.5% and 4% on local school spending every year. If a town spends above the statewide average, the cap will be lower. If the town spends below the average, the cap will be higher. Bristol Representative Dave Sharp is the chairman of the House Education Committee.
In my opinion, caps are a terrible thing. I don't like doing this, but we must respond to voters and property taxpayers in the state in the short term. And the budget growth this year, education budget growth this year, is 2.95%. So this isn't like eviscerating our schools.
Jeff Francis is the executive director of the Vermont Superintendents Association. He thinks the cap is a bad idea.
If you take a look at caps at their base level, they don't reflect legitimate needs for variability in budgets. They look past the ability of local school officials and the electorate to weigh in on what the practical needs are of schools.
Does it make sense to impose this kind of flexible cap? That's one of the questions we have for our guest today, House Speaker Shap Smith. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Are there some issues that you really want to see lawmakers deal with this year? What's at the top of your list? We'll be talking about this education bill that includes larger school districts, the flexible cap on spending. Perhaps you have some thoughts about that. Perhaps you have some thoughts about this proposed payroll tax and or a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages to boost Medicaid reimbursement rates and the so-called Medicaid cost shift would be reduced. Or maybe you have some thoughts about this year's budget. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Or better yet, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. So let's start off with this education bill. At the beginning of the session, House Democratic leaders, including yourself, talked about getting the message from voters in November, the need to do something about property taxes. So this really has several components. The first is larger school districts by 2018 or 2019. And if districts don't agree to do this themselves, then there is a mechanism to mandate those larger school districts. In the past, there hasn't been a lot of support for mandation of school districts. Is this the time?
So we should talk a little bit about what this bill doesn't do, because I think people oftentimes confuse the consolidation of school districts with the consolidation of schools. And this is about redrawing the lines to reflect the ability to provide more opportunities to kids, to create some administrative efficiencies, and to also allow some flexibility within staffing. Let me just give you an example. There are two communities that are pretty close to here that have elementary schools that are right pretty close to each other, probably 10 minutes. One has a kindergarten class that's coming in with six kids and has one teacher for those six kids. One has a kindergarten class that has 23. Because those are separate school districts, the ability to move those kids around, even though they're 10 minutes away from each other, so you can keep two teachers instead of having to hire a second teacher for the class of 23, those lines are basically barriers to doing what would be smart staffing. And, you know, that's just one example of why I think moving in a direction where we're consolidating school districts or increasing the size of them will give us some opportunities that we don't have now.
Does that inevitably mean, though, that you're going to have fewer teachers?
It may be that you need to have fewer teachers, or it may mean that you don't have to replace the teachers who are going to retire. We know that we have a demographic bubble in the teacher community. We know that we're going to have a number of them retiring in the next 5 years. I think it gives us some opportunities during that time period to readjust the staffing and address the fact that we have a smaller student population in the aggregate. So I think that's what it allows us to do.
So we got this email from Seth about school consolidation, and Seth writes, "School consolidation is a fool's errand. It's simply not going to save money. Maine tried the same thing. It didn't work. It's absurd for Vermont, a state with some of the best education ratings in the country, to dramatically change something that's decidedly working well." Do you think that this effort is being done to save money? Is that part of the goal here?
I think it's being done for a couple reasons, and one of them is definitely about the potential savings of money. The School Business Officers Association has suggested that we could save tens of millions of dollars. I want to backtrack here because, you know, I have two kids in the school system right now. My son is in seventh grade. My daughter's in fourth grade. And I'm a product of the Vermont public school system, as well as is my wife. And we have very good schools here, but we face some really difficult challenges. Our population is 30,000 students smaller than it was just 15 or 20 years ago. And many of our schools and school districts are emptying out. And we need to face that challenge, and we need to face it head on, and we need to have a governance system that provides the flexibility for people to do the right thing.
So the bill also includes this flexible cap on spending. It would go anywhere from a percentage and a half up to 4%. Good idea?
You know, I share the concerns of the representative from Bristol, Dave Sharp, but I do think that we need to bring some pressure on the growth rates within the budgets. And this is one way to do it, and it's the one that's been recommended by the Education Committee. I think that this won't be the last step along the way, but I do think that we have to figure out some way to put some pressure on the growth.
So what about the concerns? We heard it from the Vermont Superintendents Association. The School Boards Association has concerns that this really undermines local school boards and local voters, because it's telling them, you know, if you want to spend above this, hey, you can't.
I think those are legitimate concerns, but we're also saying, hey, there's a limit that the system can spend. And we heard that pretty loud and clear from Vermonters this past year. And we're trying to key it towards what the overall inflation rate is. Are there ways that we could maybe make this better? I think that's a possibility. And, you know, I think that this will be a conversation that will be difficult all the way through. And, you know, we'll see where we land.
Let's shift gears and talk about the budget gap and some new revenue that might be raised to deal with that. The House Ways and Means Committee is looking at a plan to raise roughly $35 million to help close that $110 million budget gap. The plan, if I understand it correctly, would only affect those Vermonters who itemize their deductions. And it would do that in two ways. One, it includes the governor's plan to eliminate the ability to deduct state and local taxes that were paid in the previous year. And then the second part is it would cap itemized deductions at 2.5 times the standard deduction. This means the new cap would be roughly $15,000 for individuals and $31,000 for couples. Is this a good idea?
This moves us closer to what the Blue Ribbon Tax Commission suggested a number of years ago, which was to move closer to taxing income on an adjusted gross income basis. Many states around the country do not pass through the federal itemized deductions. In fact, almost all of them that have income taxes disallow the pass-through of the federal itemized deductions in their totality. So I think this does make some sense, and I think that it's a fair way to raise revenue. We're still allowing an itemized deduction for a family of over $30,000. And for many Vermonters, that's that will not impact them.
So this plan has its critics. The governor says the cap could drive wealthy people from Vermont, because it's wealthy people, for the most part, who itemize their deductions. And this could be the kind of decision that would drive these people from the state.
Well, let's talk about why we need to do this. We're facing a shortfall of about $113 million in the budget. We're making a significant reductions in the budget that impact people who are on reach up, that cuts the amount of money that we're spending on low income heating assistance, that addresses, that makes some cuts in disability services or cuts in the growth. And I think that given where we're making the reductions in the budget, it's fair to ask people who might be doing a little better off to pitch in to solve this problem. So I think it's the right balance. I'll tell you that many of my colleagues on the left side of the caucus in the House don't think it's enough, and think that people who are making more money should pitch in more. I think it's the right balance, and I'm supportive of what the chair of the Ways and Means Committee has proposed.
So House Republican leaders argue that this year's budget still reflects something like a 4% increase in spending, and it continues the trend of unsustainable budget because it does use some one-time money and this new revenue. So can you sort of set this straight? Because when people hear budget cuts, are we actually reducing the budgets of these different programs, or are we reducing the growth rate in these budgets?
We are reducing the growth rate. I think that's correct. And, you know, it depends on what you look at, what the rate of growth is. So for the general fund, it's likely that the growth rate will be somewhere in the 4% range. But when you look at all of the funds that the state of Vermont is going to spend under the current House proposal, unduplicated, the growth rate for 1 year is going to be 1.6%. And the growth rate for 5 years will be 2.7%. And that includes some of the ERA funds that we had and spent in fiscal year 2011. So if you look at the overall rate of growth for state spending on a one-year basis for all funds in, it'll be about 1.6% under this budget.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Guy in Barry. Hi, Guy. Welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Great. What's on your mind today?
Shep, well, first of all, thank you for coming back this year. I know you, you know, thought about it long and hard, and I'm glad you're back there. And I know there are a ton of challenges. I know you talked a little bit about education funding, and I know there's a variety of proposals, either, I guess we don't want to use the word taxes, but a variety of options to try to solve these problems. I'd like to hear your thoughts on some of the proposals and whether you have other thoughts about how we can solve some of these issues.
So, you know, we talked a little bit about how we plan to address the general fund challenge. And, you know, I think we're basically saying we've got $113 million challenge in front of us. We're going to have $56 to $57 million worth of reductions in the budget, in the proposed growth of the budget. We'll have about a little $20 million, maybe a little bit more of one-time monies, and then $35 million worth of new revenue, which is sort of a it's not a soft landing under any circumstances, but it is adjusting the gap in, I think, a measured way. The one other bill that I'll talk about, and I don't know whether we're going to get to it, but at the beginning of the session, we articulated a couple of priorities for the House. One of them was to deal with the budget. One of them was to deal with health care, education, but the other was water quality and cleaning up the waters of the state of Vermont. That bill has was passed out of the Fish, Wildlife, and Water Resources Committee. It was to make sure that the state had control over its own future with regard to cleaning up the lake, Lake Champlain and the waters of Vermont, rather than having the feds do it. And that bill proposes some regulatory mechanisms to make sure that we can have best practices both in our developed areas as well as in our agricultural areas, and puts money into making sure that we can clean up the lakes there, the Lake Champlain and other waters. And that's going to be need some revenue support, and that's going to be about $7 or $8 million.
And right now, that would be a 0.2% surcharge on the state's property transfer tax?
That's correct, yep.
So some people might wonder, why should people in Windham County, why should people in Windsor County be paying a higher property transfer tax in order to clean up Lake Champlain?
I think the interesting aspect of this, or something that's been lost for a lot of people, is this is about cleaning up all of the waters of the state of Vermont. And the Connecticut River watershed has some real challenges for pollution in it as well. And so there's going to be work done both there, but also in the Lake Champlain Basin. And so it is a state problem. It needs a state revenue solution.
Today in the program, our guest is House Speaker Shap Smith. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we'll look at some other issues at the State House. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, House Speaker Shap Smith, and our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk about this Medicaid cost shift that the governor highlighted in his inaugural address. There's a plan that, to raise money to deal with this, to boost the Medicaid reimbursement rates. Part of it is now a 0.3% payroll tax. There's also a possibility of the sugar-sweetened beverage tax. And the plan would also eliminate the current assessment on employers that don't provide health insurance to their employees. So let's break this apart. 0.3% payroll tax. Do you support that?
I want to actually get into what this is, because I think it's really important to put this into context before I answer that question. So right now, Medicaid pays for health care coverage for many Vermonters, but pays at a rate that is lower than the cost of the services that's being provided. And the way that healthcare providers make up the difference is they charge more to private insurance carriers. And so essentially right now, if you have insurance, you are paying a hidden tax to make up for the under reimbursement that is done for Medicaid. So you're paying a hidden tax now, and it's basically run through your insurance premiums. And it's not paid by all Vermonters. It's only those who have private health care insurance. The governor's original proposal was meant to address this by saying, we think we ought to have a more rational structure where you see what the cost of Medicaid is, and you do it through having a payroll tax. Now, the proposal that the governor put on the table had some challenges in that the money that was raised by the payroll tax didn't all go to the cost shift. And it went to a variety of different areas, including solving the budget problem. The House Healthcare Committee said the cost shift and the hidden tax that we pay on our premiums is an important issue to address. And so we're going to address it. We'll raise a 0.3% payroll tax, and we'll drive it all back into the cost shift. And the thinking is that that will come back out of premium growth. So you'll have savings on your premiums. I think that that is a more rational system, and I think it would be the preferable system. I am under no illusions that it will be the most politically popular decision, because if you know, it's easier just to have something that you don't really know about and that's hidden in the cost of your premiums. I think that's a bad idea, and I think over the long run, it creates creates instability in our healthcare system. And I would prefer a payroll tax, and that's why I've supported what the healthcare committee proposed. Whether we can move it all the way through the legislature, I think, is a different question.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Eben in Panton. Hi, Eben. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I'd just like to voice my support for the sugar beverage tax. As someone who doesn't consume these products, I think it's wonderful that the people that do decide to consume them pay into the system for the health burden that it creates on society. And additionally, following that in that same vein of logic, I think that to the comment of the former caller from Windsor talking about the water quality issues, I think there should be somewhere between the producer to the consumer a tax on dairy in this state that should be funding the lake cleanup. As someone who does not consume, I do not consume dairy products, and I am now being asked to pay for major, major deferred maintenance in this department. And I think that would be a great way to deal with a lot of these problems facing our society are the consumption tax aspect of them.
Okay, Eben, thanks for your phone call. Let's look at the sugar-sweetened beverage tax. That's something else that the House Healthcare Committee endorsed as part of their overall Medicaid plan. Is there any future for this tax in the House?
So the Healthcare Committee funded increased cost sharing under the exchange, so helping people out who are buying policies through the exchange, increased funding for primary care providers, increased funding for Blueprint, which brings down the cost of healthcare, and increased funding for for loan repayment for primary care providers. And they did it through the sugar sweetened beverage tax. I think that there is some possibility that that revenue source, maybe in a different form, could come through the Ways and Means Committee. I know they're having discussions about it now. I don't think that there are any final decisions about it, but I think there is the possibility that something could come out of the Ways and Means Committee. I have mixed feelings about the sugar-sweetened beverage tax. One, I think from a public health measure, I actually think that it does make sense. And if you look at what's happened in Mexico, where they adopted some revenue like this, it has brought down the consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages. And over time, I think that does make a difference. My concern about that revenue source is that what you're trying to do by adopting it is change behavior and bring down people's use of it, and then it becomes a declining revenue source. And I have some concerns about building spending on a declining revenue source.
A moment ago when we were talking about the payroll tax, the 0.3% payroll tax, you said that it might not make it all the way through the legislative process this year. If that's the case, what happens to this effort to deal with the cost shift? Does it go by the side?
I think that that could be one possibility, yeah. And I think that from my perspective, that's a challenge because I do think that the cost shift, particularly in rural areas, is creating situations where people are having a harder time accessing healthcare providers. And if we don't address it either this year or in the next few years, I think it could put at risk access to healthcare in rural areas of the state.
Now, what this bill also does away with the assessment on companies that don't offer healthcare to their employees. Right now, I think it's about $485 per employee per year. So in an odd way, if you're a company that doesn't offer insurance, you don't have to pay that assessment anymore. You just have to pay the 0.3% payroll tax. You come out way ahead. And so in an odd way, are you rewarding companies that don't offer insurance to their employees?
I think that is a legitimate concern. I will say this. The money that's generated by the payroll tax is then matched with federal dollars and is driven back into the rates and is meant to go right back into the pockets of those people who are providing insurance now so that they have a net wash because the money is coming back to them in savings on their premiums.
Let's talk to Greg, who's calling from Essex. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank Hi, thanks for talking to me. This is a question about the Speaker's Economic Development Initiative. Mm-hmm. And first, I want to thank the House Commerce Committee for hearing from Essex. They gave us an hour of incredibly valuable time to hear about our business climate and the status of business in Essex. Just to pitch us a little, we are, in my view, the leader of advanced manufacturing in Vermont with GlobalFoundries/IBM. And also other great companies like Autumn Harp, Revision, Food Sciences, and a really neat startup, Dodge Ski Boots, making carbon fiber ski boots, it turns out. Anyway, we were one of the first groups in the door in January. I think it was the day after you announced that you were going to ask House Commerce to develop ideas, but I haven't heard anything on progress on that that conversation and what they're finding. Can you update me on that?
Sure, that's I'd love to. So at the beginning of the year, we asked Vermonters for ideas about economic development and how we could encourage economic development in the state of Vermont. And we got about 80, 85 proposals back on that. And we I pulled together a group of people to from outside the legislature to take a look at the proposals and see what might be workable in the short term and might be workable in the long term. They just returned something to me this week, and we're going to go in and talk about that on Tuesday in the Commerce and Economic Development Committee. And I expect them to work on those ideas and expect that there will be some progress on some of those ideas by the end of the year. There are a couple ideas that I thought were really interesting. Some of them cost money. Some of them don't. One of them was increasing access to capital and money by changing our licensed lender statutes. One of them was getting rid of the so-called cloud tax. There were a couple other ideas that I think we'll be working with in the Commerce and Economic Development Committee.
We got an email from Stephen discussing the payroll tax and wants to know if that 0.3% payroll tax is assessed, would it be on the companies, the employees, both?
My understanding is it was an employer payroll tax.
Let's talk to Emma, who's calling from Randolph. Hi, Emma. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to know how the Speaker feels about and the rationale behind the proposal to cut almost 40% out of the tourism budget. It just seems that when we have shortfalls and we're trying to all make some sacrifices to make things worse, that to decrease the number of people that may come to Vermont and the reliance that we have on that income, it just seems like we're cutting off our nose to spite our face.
Well, this is an area that has gotten a lot of discussion, and there, you know, we're looking at a lot of different places in state government where people make that argument that the money that we're reducing is going to be problematic for us over time because it's investments that we should make. And, you know, I think the question should be, and Megan Smith, who's the commissioner, is a former member and somebody who I like a lot and who I think does a good job. I think the question is, if we're going to make reductions in the state budget, or do we have to have reductions across the board? And we are making decisions in a lot of different areas that are really difficult ones. We're trying to look at the best way to spend our money, and you know, I know that we're going to continue to look at the tourism marketing question. I think it's appropriate for us to ask, is the way that we're running our tourism and marketing as efficient and effective as we could now? Are we leveraging the private dollars appropriately? And if we're not, how could we do that? And that's, I think, my hope for the discussion over the long term. I don't know where they finally have landed on the tourism marketing. I've got a number of lists here. I didn't see what they finally decided on that issue.
Let's talk to Danny in Manchester. Hi, Danny. What's on your mind today?
Well, Speaker Smith, I feel that your credibility is blown with this whole Vermont Health Connect situation. It's a fiasco. It's a mess. It's a tax drain now and an expense drain for a lot of people. There were many Vermonters who simply just paid their medical premiums, their health insurance, and they were relatively fine. They had no problems with that, and now this whole thing is a mess. And, you know, for now, you folks to talk about another gimmick with this payroll tax, which supposedly is offsetting Medicaid. I'm sorry, people don't believe you at this point because the Vermont Health Connect is such a fiasco and a mess with something like 11,000 people that wanted to make changes on their policies and can't do it. And I could share with you a litany of my own personal experiences of abuses and incompetence with Vermont Health Connect.
Danny, thanks very much for your phone call. Interesting development today with the governor saying that if the problems with the change of circumstance functions at the Vermont Health Connect, if they can't be solved by the end of May, then he's willing to look at the possibility of doing away with a state exchange and going to sort of a hybrid of the federal exchange. Does that make sense to you?
I think it does, and we've been pushing for that. Let me just say that I think Danny's right. I think that our credibility has been undermined by what has been a, I think, pretty clearly a disastrous rollout of the Vermont Health Connect. It's been problematic. It has not worked like anybody would have wanted it to work. And I think it has undermined people's faith in state government and in the idea of healthcare reform in general. And if we can't get it right by May, I think we're going to have to take a look at doing something else. I think one of the things that's frustrating about what has happened with Vermont Health Connect is it overshadows some of the good news that's out there. Our uninsured rate has dropped in half, or practically in half, since the Vermont Health Connect came online. We have one of the lowest uninsured rates in the country at 3.7%. Before this, it was 6.8%. And we have almost complete coverage in the state of Vermont. It overshadows the fact that we have slowing healthcare spending in the system in total. And it overshadows the fact that almost all Vermont's kids have access to healthcare coverage. And, you know, the failure of a website is not a failure of a system in general, but it has led people to question whether the system in general is working, and that's been a real problem.
So why is it that some states that had their own state exchange have had a wonderful experience with their website, and Vermont's experience has been so bad?
That's an excellent question. And I think you could count on maybe two fingers states that have had a wonderful exchange with their or wonderful experience with their website. It might be Kentucky. And based on my conversations with colleagues of mine from around the country, I don't think there are many other states that had a flawless rollout. I think the challenge is that maybe our contingency planning was not as strong as it should have been. But I think the other challenge was that we just hired the wrong vendor, and we pay the price for that.
Today in the program, our guest is House Speaker Shap Smith. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, House Speaker Shap Smith. We've been talking about a lot of the issues that are going to be decided at the State House in the next few weeks. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Dave in Shelburne. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hello, Speaker Smith.
Hi, Dave.
I have a couple alternate ideas that might raise revenue and help clean the lake and the environment. Instead of a sugar-sweetened beverage tax, why not bring us in line with the state of New York and put a 5-cent redemption on, bottled water, sweetened water. I mean, it's already on the container that it's a refundable thing in New York. It would raise some revenue because not everyone returns the bottles. Mm-hmm. And then it would also, in effect, help clean up the environment because everyone's just tossing their water bottles rather than recycling them. The other thing that we might consider is I drive an electric car, and people are talking about how I'm no longer paying gas taxes. Perhaps there could be like a small tax on tires, tire usage.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my ideas. I have some others, but...
Okay. Well, hey, if you have other ideas, why don't you send them to my email address, which is speaker@leg.state.vt.us, and I'll send them along to the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, Janet Ansel, for her consideration.
What about expanding the bottle bill? It seems like we hear about that at some point in every session, and it never goes anywhere.
I haven't had a chance to talk to the chair of the Natural Resources and Energy Committee about that particular issue. We focused pretty closely on the issue around reforming our renewable energy program, the SPEED program, and moving towards what's like a renewable portfolio standard. So he has been focused on that particular issue. I don't know where that committee is with regard to the expanded bottle bill, but I'll talk to him when I get back.
We were talking earlier about this budget gap. The Shulman administration is asking the state employees to come up with $10 million in savings, and they want to do that by reopening the contract and probably having some wage concessions, and also ask state employees to contribute more to their health care plan. Is the administration right to do this?
It's clear to me that if we're going to move forward to close the gap, we're not going to be able to do it with revenue only, and there's definitely going to have to be some labor savings. I can really understand why the Vermont State employees don't want to reopen the contract. The challenge is if we don't reopen the contract, it probably means you have to use the blunt instruments of layoffs. So it's a tough situation either way. And the thing that's really frustrating about that conversation is that people end up bashing state employees, and by and large, our state employees do a really good job. They work hard. They're trying to do the best for the state of Vermont and Vermonters in general. And we're just in a tough spot right now where we're gonna have to reduce some costs of labor, and it's not unlike what happens when a business has some challenges around the amount of money that it's generating. It will have to lay some people off.
So the state employees would say, hey, they negotiated hard over this contract. And, you're a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Reopening a contract, they say it sets a very dangerous precedent because it could happen anytime in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But the alternative is maybe 300 state employees being laid off. So how does this issue end up?
Well, I think that they have a legitimate concern about reopening the contract. And if I were in their position, I am not sure whether I would reopen the contract. But the fact of the matter is that we're going to have to find some savings in labor, and it's going to have to be shared in management and those who are not in management. And we don't have a lot of really good options there. My hope is that we can do a lot of it through vacancy savings or not filling positions, but it may mean that we're going to have to do some layoffs as well.
Let's go back to our listeners and talk to Mo in Rutland. Hi, Mo. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to disagree, Shep, with the fantasy that of the cost shift. We're tied into contracts with the insurance company. When Medicare rates are insufficient and Medicaid are insufficient, what we find is the insurance companies say, well, if Medicare and Medicaid are only going to pay that much, we're also going to lower what we pay. By the way, there was an unannounced cut in our reimbursement. In the States, payment for a Medicaid patient for chiropractic for the entire year was $360. They've lowered that now. That was 36 visits. I'm sorry, 10 visits at $36. Now it's $27.88. We don't see that Blue Cross Shield is raising their rates. What we find is they say, well, they're only paying so much, we're going to lower our rates. So I don't see this cost shift. And now you want to raise our payroll tax on top of that. You know, it's just unsustainable what the state has done in this matter.
Can I ask you a question?
A patient for that kind of money is ridiculous. Okay. Go ahead.
Let me ask you this question. Is Blue Cross Blue Shield reimbursing you more than Medicaid is?
Blue Cross Blue Shield cut our reimbursement by 20%.
I understand that, but are they still...
Is it more than Medicaid?
Yes.
Is it more than Medicare? No.
Okay. You know, I don't know what the individual provider arrangements are for chiropractic care, because it sounds like you're a chiropractor. You know, based on conversations that I've had with other providers and hospitals, there is a cost shift in those areas.
Let's talk to John, who's calling from Richmond. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I guess my question is what the speaker's thoughts are on what seem to be competing priorities between, you know, consolidation in school districts and then the short-term goal of caps on spending. It would seem, from my perspective, that that would kind of hamstring any ability, especially in the short term, to make structural changes that might require an investment at the outset, but that would yield savings and improvements in educational quality for years down the road. With a 1.5% cap, most, if not all, of that might be just consumed in wages. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to hear what the speaker thinks about those seemingly competing priorities.
You know, somebody brought this up yesterday. In particular, the concern about whether if you had expenses associated with trying to do consolidation of districts, whether the fact that you had those additional costs during the consolidation process would be included in the cap, and if they were included in the cap, whether that would prevent the consolidation from going forward. I haven't had a chance to talk to the chair of the Education Committee yet, but my hope is that we could exempt those costs from the cap so that if you were trying to make some long-term structural changes that made some sense from efficiency perspective, we could get those done.
Got just a little bit of time left, but I'd love to get your thoughts on this gun bill that's going to be on the Senate floor next week. If I understand it correctly, it would prohibit some convicted criminals from possessing firearms. It would be a state law. Right now, there's a federal law that does that. What are your thoughts about that bill?
I think that it's narrowly tailored. It seems to meet the right balance. And my sense is that if it came over from the Senate, it's likely to get support from the House Judiciary Committee and probably the House in general.
There's also a bill being discussed in the House that would prohibit teachers from going on strike. It also would make it illegal for school boards to impose contracts. Now, there was supposed to be a provision of binding arbitration there, but that's been sort of let go. And now it's bring a mediator in instead. Isn't that basically what we do now? If there's a disagreement between the school board and teachers, we bring a mediator in. So how is this really any different?
Well, I think that that's a good question. And there's a real dispute between two committees of jurisdiction, the House Education Committee and the House General Housing and Military Affairs Committee, about whether the bill passed by the Education Committee will work. And whether it will solve standoffs between the school boards and the union. So we have some more work to do on that bill.
Well, a lot of issues we'll be following in the weeks ahead. House Speaker Shap Smith, many thanks for being on the program today.
Hey, it was great to be here.
That is our program for today. Monday on Vermont Edition, Governor Peter Shumlin's proposed budget includes a plan to close two of the state's public safety answering points. These are the centers that handle 911 and state police calls. We'll hear both sides of that debate. Post your questions or comments about closing these centers to vermontedition@vpr.net and listen Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sungari, and Steve Zinn, with production assistance from Devin Karambulis. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.